And you're listening to CKLN. My name is Norman Otis Richmond, and this is a show called Diasporic Music. And joining me on the line is Michael Parente. Michael, are you there?
Yes, I am, Norman.
Michael Parente is a noted author and political commentator. Among his widely read books are The Terrorist Trap, Democracy for the Few, History as Mystery, and Against Empire. His latest book is The Assassination of Julius Caesar, A People's History of Ancient Rome, which is available at your better bookstores in Toronto and in Ontario, and it's put out by New Press. I'm very excited about talking to you because Prime Minister Paul Martin will meet with the 14th Dalai Lama in a few days, and they will discuss spiritual matters. Martin will be the first Canadian Prime Minister to come face-to-face with the 68-year-old Buddhist holy man. The Chinese government has exerted pressure on Martin not to meet with the Dalai Lama. Some have said that this would be like President Bush meeting with the Quebecois separatists. What are your thoughts on this?
I don't know exactly what the diplomatic ins and outs are, but the Dalai Lama represents a theocracy that no longer exists, and I thought of very highly by people all around the world. I've written about Tibet and the kind of country it was under the Dalai Lama. Of course, he was only about 15 or 16 at the time, but still, it was a country of immense poverty and immense exploitation by the rich lords and lamas over the peasantry. It was not the kind of place I'd want to live. He's been made into a hero because it was the Chinese communists who kind of unseated him. And so he is seen as somebody to be much admired. Now, whether he should be meeting or not with this other gentleman, I don't know.
Okay, now, we know that the Dalai Lama is become a shining star among a lot of the Hollywood crowd. I think a guy by the name of Michael Valpy, who is a writer for the Globe and Mail, talked about them, called them the Tibetniks. Sharon Stone says that the Dalai Lama is the hardest working man in spirituality. Richard Gere, you wrote that Richard Gere gushed that the Dalai Lama is the greatest living human being. Goldie Hawn introduced him in Vancouver. Could you talk about this fascination by some Westerners with feudalism?
They don't see him as a representative of feudalism. They see him as a representative of a great spiritual movement. Certainly Buddhism is a spiritual movement. Buddhist techniques of meditation and the like can be very useful for people and may put you in a good place. But the society that Tibet had back in the 1950s was a terrible feudalism. The peasants were taxed ruthlessly. They were taxed when they got married, taxed when they died, taxed when a child was born, taxed when they bought a cow or sheep. Some were mutilated if they didn't pay their debts. They were terribly in debt. They were exploited by the rich monasteries and rich lords, and the Dalai Lama presided over this whole thing. He was both a spiritual leader and a terrestrial leader, too, a secular leader, if you will. Whether you want to blame him, hold him accountable or not is a different question. As I say, he was only a youth when the whole thing was overthrown. But I don't see that Tibet of that era as a society that I should treasure. And there are a lot of Westerners who believe that Tibet under the Dalai Lama was a society so pristine and so admirable. It was free of all the materialistic contaminants of Western society. And I guess it's a comfort to think that somewhere in the world, sometime in history, there was this really decent, beautiful place where everybody lived in symbiotic harmony with each other, and that was that. And really, it wasn't like that. There was a lot of grief, a lot of conflict, a lot of rather brutal oppression, a lot of resentment by the peasants. I mean, they did not support the CIA-sponsored counter-revolution against Chinese occupation. The people the CIA sent in were usually the sons of lamas or lords or whatever well-to-do group, and none of them survived. And the Chinese didn't have that big an army in Tibet either. They didn't have that many troops. And the Chinese were not exactly angels themselves. What they did bring in is a lot of Chinese population into Tibet, and often treated the Tibetans with little respect. But they did get rid of this awful, punitive, regressive, retrograde feudal system and this feudal theocracy. One of the things the theocratic class did was go around and pick out 9-year-old boys from the peasant families and bring them into the monasteries to be used as sexual objects and recruited into the monkhood, or used as soldiers or domestic servants or whatever else. And a lot of those monks left when the Chinese gave the option to the monasteries and said, anybody who wants to leave can leave. And thousands of them left, never wanted to be there. The older monks stayed and continued on a very modest government stipend, plus whatever money they could make by presiding over weddings and funerals and the like. So I think there is freedom for Buddhism in Tibet under the Chinese communists, but very little encouragement of it. And of course, a lot of the monasteries and the monastery lands were taken away and redistributed to the peasantry.
I'm speaking to Michael Parente, the author of a great book called The Assassination of Julius Caesar, A People's History of Ancient Rome. Michael Parente is on the line from Seattle, Washington. You wrote an article where you quoted the Dalai Lama in the late 90s or in the beginning of the 21st century. He made a statement that he was half Marxist, half Buddhist. He actually condemned capitalism for being greedy, and he talked about Tibet materially is very, very backward. Spiritually is quite rich, but spirituality can't fill our stomachs. He said that in 2001, but this is the same man who, in 1995, according to your article, an article was in the Raleigh, North Carolina News and Observer. It carried a front page photograph of the Dalai Lama. He's being embraced by the notorious Senator Jesse Helm. And in April of 1999, the Dalai Lama, along with Margaret Thatcher, the Pope, and the first George Bush, called upon the British government to release Augusto Pinochet. And many people maintain that the Dalai Lama is either an active CIA agent or he is on the payroll of the CIA. Could you talk about that?
I don't maintain that. That's been reported in the Western press that the Dalai Lama was on the CIA payroll. I think the Dalai Lama got about $180,000 a year from the CIA. He has never admitted or denied that he received money from the CIA, nor his brother. And in fact, the whole noble, elite Tibetan theocracy that went into exile, they all were on the CIA budget. Now, that money is no longer given by the CIA for public relations purposes. It's now the National Endowment for Democracy, which is a semi-official, half-public, half-private kind of organization. It's funded by Congress, and they give money to the Dalai Lama. He most definitely is in those quarters, and he has called for the release of Pinochet. That's a matter of public record. And he did pal around with Jesse Helms. That's a matter of public record. The Raleigh Observer or whatever newspaper I cited.
News and Observer, right.
May I say, he's also made comments recently of the kind you've said, where he's been talking in a way that sounds rather blasphemous to the right wing, in the sense that he recognizes the need of people to have a decent material existence along with the spirituality that he markets.
But at the same time, he lives in, according to an article I read, that the Tibetniks put him up in a $10,000 a night penthouse. He likes that kind of living too, right?
Yes, I imagine he does not live in a little thatched hut or anything like that. He lives pretty well, as we might expect, from a man who has such patrons as Richard Gere, Sharon Stone, Goldie Hawn, and the U.S. taxpayers and the U.S. government. So he does okay.
I was reading a quote where the Dalai Lama says that homosexuality, anal and oral sex, and using one's hands are sexual misconduct and should be shunned. This came out in an article that Michael Valpy did for the national newspaper in Canada, The Globe and Mail. So he's a moralizer as well.
Well, there are a lot of religionists who have these views about masturbation or homosexuality or stuff like that. And I guess if that quote is accurate, then the Dalai Lama is one of those. They define sin in terms of these kind of personal choices rather than thinking of sin as something that's social and something that's done to other people, harming other people and the like. He's not a hero of mine, but I don't really see the Dalai Lama as such as the main villain, and I don't see Buddhism as a bad movement. I see it as an interesting kind of a discipline. Mostly, it's not like a lot of religions. It's really more a kind of a discipline of the spirit inside. But as taught to the peasants in Tibet, it did have a self-justifying theology that justified the existing class system in Tibet. If people want to read the article, they can go to my website, by the way, which is www.michaelparenti, which is P as in Peter, P-A-R-E-N-T-I, one word, michaelparenti.org, and you can find the article there. Let me just say one thing. You know, Tibet was historically always a Chinese province. Tibetan rulers, the feudal rulers, including past Dalai Lamas, always relied on Chinese bayonets to shore up their rule. The difference that happened in the 1950s is that the Chinese government had become communist. And so for about 10 years, they controlled Tibet, but they were waiting for changes to take place. And when these changes didn't take place, I think it's rather naive of the Chinese, because there's never been a privilege-owning class that ever surrendered its privileges willingly and without pressure on them. And when they didn't, that's when the Chinese cracked down, and that's when the Tibetans, egged on by the CIA, the Tibetan leaders, that's when they tried their revolution, which failed miserably against the Chinese.
Okay, I have been speaking to Michael Parenti, who is the author of a great book called The Assassination of Julius Caesar, A People's History of Ancient Rome. It's put out by the New Press, and I saw it the other day in a different book list on Bathurst Street. I've seen it at, I know that it's available at Pages and at your better bookstores in Toronto and in around Ontario. So thank you very much, Mr. Parenti.
Thank you, Norman.